Hey everybody, and welcome to this new episode of Frank About Health. Today, I will first issue my disclaimer before I get into the episode. The views that will be mentioned in today's show are not the views of Frank About Health or TalkRadio.nyc, but rather food for thought for a very insightful and interesting, engaging conversation between me and my usual co-host, Phyllis Quinlan. But in this case, she's also my special guest, and I will explain that further. Please note that any of the information here is to be taken as information that might pertain to you, but is not in any way to dissuade you from discontinuing any of your ongoing treatments, medications, or other services that you are currently engaging in managing your quality of life and your overall health care. That all being said, welcome as we discuss about the importance of retaining nurses and where we go from here. That's the title of today's episode. Today, Phyllis Quinlan, who, by the way, is the president and CEO of MFW Consultants to Professionals, is also with the experience of having been on Frank About Health to discuss many important critical issues when it comes to topics such as caregiving, such as understanding the importance of nursing and trauma professionals and alternative care and Reiki and other kinds of issues that we've really brought to light, especially on last week's episode when we were looking at three interesting authors that had their own healthcare story. And so that was the incentive to have a discussion today about some recent research that Phyllis has engaged in on the entire quality of the nursing profession as it has been and where it's headed going forward, and the important issues that we need to really explore to understand how to really ripen the best talent that we have in such a critical need as healthcare. So, that all being said, Phyllis, welcome as always to this episode of Frank About Health. But I wanted to know definitely what motivated you to discuss this particular issue tonight?
Well, Frank, first I want to thank you for letting me come on, not just as your co-host, but as your guest this evening. I really wanted to have a forum to put into context some an article that has come out that has been published by the American Association of Critical Care Nurses. It came out in early August, and it is now circulating and causing quite a bit of discussion. And it's not causing quite a bit of discussion because of the quality of the research. The research is wonderful. The survey that was conducted by the American Association of Critical Care Nurses is important and ongoing, and just part of the collective great body of work that comes out of AACN. But it the one of the lines that was in the recent article that was published in Critical Care Nurse, the publication for AACN, was a little bit of, I guess, what we could call headline grabbing. And it reads 67, excuse me, 67% of nurses plan to leave their position within 3 years. And that was a report from over 9,000 nurses that took the AACN survey. So as you can imagine, if anyone is reading that, and various social media outlets have picked it up, various healthcare publications, online healthcare publications have picked it up. But they're not picking it up necessarily in the context in which it was written. They're picking up that line because, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, you know. And my concern, my sincere concern, is that at a time when we're coming out of such a dark place of the pandemic, when we're looking towards the future to try to regain a sense of resilience and well-being, when it's now safe to go back to the doctor and get your appropriate screening and lean more into conventional methods of making sure you're the healthiest you possibly can be, I don't want any misuse of this research to make people think twice about going into healthcare because they don't think that the hospitals are staffed properly. That is not the case. And I really want to lend some context to that. And I really appreciate you allowing me to come on today in the capacity of a guest in order to share some insights And also to say how proud I am of the work being done by AACN. I have been a member of the Association of Critical Care Nurses 1979, I think. We go back a bit.
Yes. No, but I mean, the thing is that as you realize, when we have done all these various episodes of Frank About Health together, a lot of the focus is apparently on the doctor or the specialist or the alternative care practitioner. And we find that nursing plays a role, but it's in the periphery. So what I was even most incentivized by having you come on the show today is really for the two of us together to shed light on how valuable the nursing profession is. I know, as you know about my circumstances going on with my father, for example, I think over the last 2 weeks, I met four different nurses and we were talking about quality of home care, you know, and something that I had not done really in the last 2 years. It was always seeing his oncologist or seeing his other PCP or things like that. But when I was having conversations with them, it reminded me of you. So I thought it was very timely that we really shed light and make awareness to the listeners and viewers out there as to how valuable the nursing profession is, that they're just not shed on a spotlight during a pandemic, that they're there and they're relevant going definitely into the future.
Well, you know, respectfully, there's nothing peripheral about nurses, respectfully. We are the central core of healthcare. If the nurses go down, forget about it.
Yes.
Forget about it. You'll have a lot, you know, people will get pills, dressings will get changed. But when you're thinking about the profession of nursing and what it lends to the quality of care here in the United States and across the country, the accountability and responsibility that is imprinted on their DNA, the amount of academic preparation and clinical competencies, national certifications, board certifications in multiple clinical areas, how we have changed this profession since the 60s when it was hospital-based three-year program all the way through the associate's program, baccalaureate, multiple ways to obtain a master's degree in three tremendous areas of specialty, and now 6 to 7% of the nursing population is prepared at a doctorate level. There is nothing peripheral about nursing. We are at the heart of it. We are the advocates, and that is the first thing that we learn, is that you speak for the patient and you make sure you advocate for the patient. So really, I wanted this opportunity to lend some context to the fact that yes, we have, you know, we have some staffing issues. We have the whole country, maybe the whole planet is facing this great resignation kind of challenge. But I want to assure everyone, you know, that the nursing organizations and healthcare industry across the country are working collaboratively to speak frankly about this subject and to find not just mundane solutions, but also very creative solutions. And they are canvassing the nursing population, really trying to put their ear to the ground to listen to what the nurses are saying and taking it very, very seriously and doing their very best to make incremental changes accordingly. As you know, when we're dealing with organizations, nothing works quickly. So, you know, you just don't want change for change's sake. You want to have tests of change so that you can see what works best. And then whatever is identified as what works best, you want to try to hardwire it into your culture.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I think to myself that especially during the last several months, not in even doing this show, a lot of the people that I've been able to speak to first and foremost prior to getting to my father's doctors or my cousin's doctors or my own doctors has been the nurses that worked with them. And I found that I would have much more engaging and well thought out conversations with them about the long-term care of the patient in question. And the thing is that it just becomes a little bit of an enigma to me until maybe like this episode where you're providing the context that's necessary. But what do you think is the reason why that public perception has been that nurses are not an afterthought? I don't want to use the wrong word here, that they don't get the respect that they inherently deserve. What do you think that is a function of?
Reality.
I know, but it's like, nurses, again,
nurses by and large have had to advocate and demonstrate and claim their chair in the room. They have had to say, well, here's where we are, and we're not backing away from it. You know, you can call it a function of a female-dominated profession up until maybe the 80s. You know, you could, there's a lot of sociological things that in, you know, that are imparted into this. You know, our background, you know, our roots are in the military and religious services. That's where we get our hierarchy from: chief nursing officer, head nurse, you wear a uniform, we wore caps as opposed to a veil. You know, there's a lot of, you know, culture and sociology in that perception, where angels of mercy, and angels of mercy don't necessarily ask for what's rightfully theirs. They work from compassion, and that should be enough, as opposed to appropriate salary and recognition for what their license is allowing them to do so that they can work at the top of their license. There are 10,000 different reasons why the perception of nurses isn't as stellar as I'd like it to be, not the least of which are, you know, TV programs and movies and different things that portray nurses not in the capacity of what they are doing.
Right.
But, you know, so we really do have to reach out and make sure that we need to do, I think one of the things that we need to do is put a better job out, a better word out there, and maybe market ourselves, or at least put our messages out there, so some of the extraordinary things that are being done by nurses are not just taken for granted and, like, you know, job well done, good for you, but we actually promote this as, you know, one of the just invaluable, indispensable professions on the planet.
Yes. You know, well, we have a break now, but I just wanted to say what we'll talk about in the next segment is how together, maybe like on this episode especially, we can learn to start changing the narrative on the nursing profession, because I do believe it needs to be seen on equal footing as any medical professional. All right, that all being said, please stay tuned on this episode of Frank About Health with special guest and co-host Phyllis Quinlan, and we'll see you in a few minutes after these messages on Talk Radio NYC and Facebook Live.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business, or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back. And as we were just exiting before the break, you, Phyllis, were talking about the great resignation that is pending over the next 3 years based on that survey. I wanted to ask you a couple questions in relation to that. Is a nursing shortage or a new phenomenon, or the great resignation in relation to nurses a new phenomenon?
It's a great question, Frank. And this is one of the key things that I don't think many people really understand. Staffing is a perpetual issue. Okay, recruitment, retention, turnover is a perpetual issue. Yes, you go through periods where, you know, there are more challenges than not. So, but I don't know if your listeners know, but back in the late 80s, the United States were recruiting from all over the country to bring nurses into the United States because we did not have enough nurses. So we were recruiting in the Philippines, we were recruiting in the United Kingdom, we were recruiting in Ireland and India. We were recruiting any place that, you know, where the academic preparation pretty much aligned with what you would find here in the United States, and the secret ingredient, people were fluent in English. So there were open doors for immigration set out there. And, you know, there were alliances that had to be made based on housing and bringing people over and orientation. And I was involved in really orienting a tremendous amount of those nurses in the organization I was working with at the time. So, you know, the point that I'm really trying to make here is that this is a perpetual challenge. And I don't want it, I don't want people to not be concerned. And I am absolutely dedicated to creating healthiest work environments and supporting people in pursuing and finding the joy and staying connected to the mission and purpose of their profession. But this is an ongoing challenge. I started practicing in the late 70s. It's been an ongoing challenge the 44 years I've been practicing. And we have taken extraordinary steps, again, recruiting internationally to bring nurses to the United States. That's just one thing that we did. You know, there was a concern that started in the late 90s where, you know, baby boomers were starting to, the average age of the nurse in and around that time was somewhere in the mid to late 50s. So of course we were projecting that people would be retiring, and we weren't seeing a lot of people going into nursing programs. So there was a real good look at how do we get nurses in, what is the way, how do you appeal and promote the profession of nursing, what it is, what it's not, according to television and things of that nature. And, you know, how do you access a pathway, whether it's starting at the associate degree level, moving on to a baccalaureate level, but how do you access a pathway to become a professional registered nurse? All of these things have been going on for years. So you know, when people read these headlines that 67% of the nurses are leaving, you know, that they're not leaving the profession of nursing. They're leaving the position more than likely of what they are doing now. And they are looking for something else. Now that could be because they are in retirement age and are looking for per diem or part-time. That could be because they have earned other certifications, advanced practice and different things. They're looking for opportunities. That could be, like myself, they're going to become an entrepreneur and they're going to partner in different ways. There are multiple reasons for this, but I just don't want your listeners to start thinking, my God, the last place that's safe on earth is our hospitals, because that's just not the reality. And I can share with you, these are the challenges I have faced as a clinician and educator and administrator for the last 44 years, and we have navigated them well. And in the midst of navigating these challenges, we have grown the profession exponentially. Nurses are now, you know, really, you know, among the highest, you know, educated workforce we are ever seeing. They're coming out with their degrees, they're going on for their clinical certifications. Many of them are choosing master's programs either in business or in advanced practice, nurse practitioners or in education. And, you know, we've never had enough academics to be able to staff the colleges enough. So we're trying to promote doctorate prepared nurses. And we are now up to about 5 to 6% of nurses are prepared at the doctorate level, which is then going to foster our ability to have more nursing students come in. So, you know, we're on this, and I don't want your listeners to think we're not.
Oh, no, I've actually seen it firsthand, particularly at NYU Langone Health Systems. where the nurses are just as actively involved as the medical student interns that are in their specialties. But I mean, I think even NYU created an entire nursing division over the last 5, 6, 7 years. But the thing that I'm trying to point out is that's just a prototype. That's just a microcosm. But from the whole long-term perspective of the profession, I think that there are definitely other aspects of the profession that have to be more fleshed out and more communicated to bring a different narrative to the perception that has unfortunately existed for all these years that you've been in the profession. I mean, you did mention earlier, though, that there was a lot of recruitment in faraway countries. Did you find that nurses were considered more traveling nurses, or is that the same thing domestically, that nurses within the United States are going outside the country for more type of nursing work?
So the whole idea of supplemental staffing came about in the mid-80s. And again, it pretty much coincided with the fact that we were recruiting outside of the country to supplement the numbers that we needed. And, you know, there were opportunities that, you know, if you wanted to keep your day job, so to speak, but you also then, we were also going into those 12-hour shifts, so people had multiple days off. There were options to work in other organizations or do other shifts, perhaps right. in another organization or in another venue where you were clinically competent, but you were kind of testing the waters and stretching your clinical skills and doing whatever, and of course, you know, commanding a salary for that. I promise you, as much as we deserve and we want, you know, a commensurate salary, I don't know, I've never met a nurse that said, yeah, I went into nursing for the money, because it's just not there. And, you know, we go into nursing for very, very different reasons, but we do deserve and command a substantial salary that should be commensurate with our academic preparation, our clinical certifications, or our experience, just like right. any other profession. But people get horrified when we talk about this because we're supposed to be the angels of mercy or the caring piece, and it's almost unladylike, if you will, all right, to right. say, no, I this is what I command at this point. And we need to, as a population, get past that, because there's a significant number of professional registered nurses that are men. And there are people who identify very differently now, all in nursing, providing extraordinary care, getting the planet through the pandemic, doing what they need to do. Right. But let's talk about those travel nurses for a second, because there's sure. a big misperception out there. That's part of the marketing. Now, you know that I am a professional coach for several of our professional nurses associations, and I speak to nurses across the country.
Yes.
There are three reasons that I'm finding that nurses choose to go into traveling. One is the younger nurses coming in are now saying, wow, the planet actually shut down. And you know what? That means that it could potentially shut down again. I better go travel and see the planet while I can, because who knows what's happening in 5 years, 2 years, or whatever. Let me travel now. Let me see the country. Let me do what I want to do and experiment and test things here while I'm young enough to enjoy it, and then I'll settle down. But there is this, whoa, that was close. Maybe, you know, I wasn't sure I was going to ever like enjoy my adulthood or my middle adulthood. Yes. The second piece is that there are nurses and a substantial number of them that were just done after COVID. They were done. They were done with how it was managed or mismanaged. They were done with there were a number of staff of nurses that reported that they were not happy with the fact that maybe their leaders weren't as visible as they would like to have been. They felt that they were not necessarily being protected or advocated for. There was a loss of trust. And what happens then is people shut down, they isolate. It's the worst thing a professional caregiver can do, but this is what's happened. And what they did now is they're reporting to me that they've left the professional practice where they were, but they're going to practice nursing to the best of their capability for themselves. And they're right. going to take travel assignments in hospitals and organizations where they feel they can just practice and do their personal best each and every day and then come home. And it's almost like a healing period. They're not leaving their profession by any stretch, but right. they don't want to work in the organization or the industry of healthcare, which people do confuse. There's a difference between the profession of nursing and the industry of healthcare, two different things.
Right.
The last, and I think probably the least reported that I am getting, is that while many nurses worked and were overworked during COVID, their spouses and significant others perhaps were not. So if they had a family business, it went under. If somebody was working in another industry, they got laid off or furloughed. So people were burning through their savings and their children's college fund in order to make ends meet until the end of the pandemic. So they have this opportunity now. They're exhausted, and no reality has changed for them, but they now have an opportunity for the short period of time or the window that is open to make more money than they ever thought they could. And they're not doing it for the money as such. They're doing it because I can make that money and replenish my retirement fund. I can put back in my children's college fund. I can financially recover from the consequences of COVID. It has nothing to do with nursing as such and everything to do with the security of my family.
Right.
So this is what I'm hearing from nurses across the country who are choosing to do travel nursing at this point. And that tends to get misrepresented. A lot of people are out there surmising, guesstimating, assuming, well, here's the motivation behind this. Everybody's in it for the money. That is just not the case. It's not my reality, and I'm talking to those nurses. It's not right. What they're sharing with me.
Well, we're headed for another break, but when we get back, I want to bring up a few things that you mentioned that also implied the issue of burnout, and I want to get into a further discussion with you on that. That all being said, please stay tuned as we are talking about retaining nurses and where we go from here on this episode of Frank About Health, both on talkradio.nyc and on Facebook Live. Please stay tuned.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. Phyllis, it's very interesting to see how everybody, whether they were a nurse or whether they were a doctor or just an average everyday citizen, responded to a 2.5 year long pandemic. And the issue that always comes up on anybody's retrospect of how they went through it is the issue of burnout. You had mentioned about how that a lot of the people that are traveling nurses are doing it for a lot of reasons that are probably looking for that new window, that new bright light after having to go through the stresses and losses that they had to face while enduring the pandemic struggles and work pressures and things like that. Was it just an issue of burnout, though, or was it a catalyst that would provoke people to go look elsewhere, whether through traveling or through just, you know, mirroring their nursing with more entrepreneurial activities? That's what I wanted to first find out.
Well, I think, as I explained, there's three dominant reasons that I'm being made aware of by the nurses who are traveling themselves. It's right. One, I better see the planet while I can. You know, two, I need to just buy back into my profession. I don't want to be part of an organization I no longer trust or I feel as though didn't treat me well enough during the pandemic. So I'm taking right. that much needed break. And then three is, well, we're pretty much financially hanging by our fingernails, and I have this responsibility to my family to build either the college fund back up or my retirement fund back up. Because COVID hit our family hard. So those are the three pieces. But let me share with you what some of the great thought leaders across the country are talking about. And because I think it's really insightful. There is an organization called the Advisory Board. And the Advisory Board is a think tank. And it's something that healthcare executives across the country kind of subscribe to. And it's a curation of knowledge, if you will, so you can read a lot and gain a lot of insight in a short period of time, because who could keep up with the reading? And, you know, they did a podcast not too long ago, probably within the last 2 weeks or so. And what they were talking about is that it's not a great resignation, it's a great realignment. And that, as I shared with you, people are not leaving the profession. They're leaving the position, maybe the conventional position, and they're looking for something that better aligns with what they now want for themselves in life and better comports with it feeding their soul as opposed to just practicing their profession. They want a little excitement. They want to share, you know, stretch the edge of the envelope. They want to see if entrepreneurism is for them or if this piece over here, perhaps telemedicine, is for them. So they're looking at new and different, according to the advisory board, and non-traditional opportunities. Again, you know, prior to 2020, the driving force for people leaving a job and going to another job was salaries. And that's not, you know, I mean, that's any industry. That's not unique to nursing. Everybody and anybody is going to do that. But we're finding, according to the advisory board, post 2020, people are looking at their organizations and they're saying, is my organization conducting itself in a way that's socially responsible? Is my organization someplace where it is diverse, you know, where opportunities are equitable and I feel included and belong to this organization? Am I going to be led by someone who looks like me? And they're really very concerned, especially the younger generations, very, very concerned about corporate integrity. So when I tell you this is the most educated group of nurses in my lifetime, I'm not kidding. They are asking some serious questions, and they are seeing themselves as not just citizens of the United States, but citizens of the planet. And they want to serve. But they are not going to get caught up in, or they are saying, I'm going to make sure I don't get caught up in an organization that doesn't align with my sense of social justice, mission, and purpose, which I 1,000% applaud. But is, of course, the message in that is to healthcare organizations is we need to take a good look at ourselves. We need to take a what are the criteria for the best places to work? There are all sorts of criteria that comport with how organizations get rated for, is this the best place to work? Is it not a best place to work? You need to start thinking about that, and you need to start listening, especially to the younger nurses coming in, about what's really important to them. What I really, really enjoyed was I was watching a podcast that was put out by the Schwartz Center for Compassion. And it was out on, I want to say, the 10th of this month. And there were nurse leaders on there, some very credible, very credentialed nurse leaders. And the name of that podcast was The Organizational Strategies to Address the Nation's Nursing Crisis. So they're not pulling punches. They understand we're in tough times. And the people that were represented were nurse researchers from across the country, people who represented nursing professional organizations across the country and the American Nurses Association Foundation. So, right. You know, these were significant thought leaders. And the number one thing they said is that we have to acknowledge that we have a mental health emergency within the profession. And mm-hmm. you and I have talked about the fact that, you know, organizations, regardless of the profession, they want to keep going. Let's think forward. Let's keep going. Leave the pandemic behind us, you know, think forward, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's okay. But when you're exhausted, that's a little tough. And and exactly. we are not built for this kind of persistent uncertainty that we have dealt with for the last 2.5 years. We're not built for this. This is war. This is war mentality. We haven't had anything like this since World War II, where it, you know, this persistent things going on for weeks, months, years, but then followed by the uncertainty of when is it going to stop? It takes its toll. It's toll. And we have to appreciate that normal, healthy coping skills, you know, and good peer support is starting to evaporate because it's just going on for too long. COVID, in many cases, response to COVID may be over and we have a couple of hot spots and whatnot to do. But the consequences of COVID, the fallout from COVID, the exhaustion from COVID is far from over. So, you know, they're really saying that, you know, they really feel that the mental health issues are, you know, really beginning to think, and they can manifest in all sorts of things, anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress, you know, eating disorders, whatever the case, account for about 50% of what we reported as the number for burnout. And that there is, you know, there is such a stigma associated with getting help. Now, I want to poke your memory for a minute. I don't know if you remember that there was a physician who in New York, her name is Dr. Lorna Breen. And she was a physician. I want to say she was at Columbia Presbyterian, but I'm not sure. She was, of course, one of the physicians, like many physicians, mounting the response. She had shared with her family that she was starting to crack and crumble under the stress of what was going on, but she didn't feel like she could say anything because she thought it would affect her career going forward.
Right.
And she didn't say anything. And then she contracted COVID. And the heartbreak here is that she was in such agony, she took her own life. And it was like it really made the headlines, a physician commits suicide. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there is no silver lining to that kind of tragedy, but Lorna had wonderful family and they got together and they said, you know, this can never happen again. Lorna's legacy has to be for something positive. They worked with President Biden and they were able to successfully campaign and pass the Lorna Breen Act and establish the Lorna Breen Foundation. The Lorna Breen Act provides for millions of dollars in programming and support for mental health programs across the country for professional caregivers. And through that Lorna Breen Foundation, they are starting to do some research and they are now lending their very strong voice to the collective voice of the issue of mental health, which is number one, we need to let go of the stigma. So, you know, we have to get away from the mentality I grew up in, which was suck it up, buttercup, you know, and denying our humanness.
Right.
And now start to really embrace it's okay not to be okay, but it's not okay not to ask for help. And it's not okay not to accept help when it's offered. So we really need to change mindset. We really need to change perspective. And we really need to work through this stigma of, you know, when healthcare providers are showing their humanness, that is somehow a signal that they're not good enough or they're broken or they're not strong enough. That is nonsense. That is a demonstration of their humanity. And we need to show them the same loving kindness, support, and of course, throw the resources at them as we would a patient. They are extraordinary people. They are among the most generous people on the planet, but they're human first. So we really need to be able to do that. Another thing that came out, I'm sorry. Did you have a question?
Oh, no, I was actually going to say that one of the questions that came to my mind was about what you think makes a healthy work environment, but you're actually answering it, because what you're saying is that as the burnout has led to that one instance, for example, mm-hmm. where that young woman took her life as a result of whatever was going through her mind and holding everything inside and not being able to express herself, that's based on the organizational structure that has not shifted or that has not changed with the times. And I guess what needs to be done, as what we're discussing today and what I gather a lot of the nurses who are talking about leaving are trying to do, is bridge out from an organizational mindset and go from the entrepreneurial mindset to create the culture that is needed for these professionals to continue to thrive even during a pandemic or other stressful times.
Well, I think what comes with education is the ability to ask good questions.
Yes.
And I think this is what we're seeing from the younger nurses, or when I say younger nurses, let me also say newer nurses who are coming into nursing as a second profession. They may not be young as such, but they are newer nurses, and they are highly educated, and they are asking good questions. Like, why would anxiety be a problem? What does that mean? I've navigated my entire life, and here I am today, and now all of a sudden you're telling me I'm not good enough because you're nervous about my anxiety? That makes no sense. So they're asking good questions. They're asking, you know, why not, you know, look at equity, inclusion, and diversity. What are we so afraid of? What would we lose? We have everything to gain. They're asking really good questions. And I think we need to support that. And I think those of us that have been in the profession for a long time, it's kind of like, you know, it's a little unnerving, not because the questions are being asked, but because we don't have all the answers.
Correct.
But we are trying to find those answers, and those answers might be hidden in a bit of, you know, unconscious bias, and those answers might be hidden in other things, and fear of loss of, you know, your prestige, or, you know, I'm not sure what my role is in this organization anymore, or even just fear of having a conversation for fear that you might
lose your job,
offend somebody. So there's, yeah. You know, it gets worse before it gets better, but there's never a bad thing about asking good questions. And these questions needed to be answered. And I'm going to answer your healthy work environment question when we come back.
Yeah, thank you. That's how together as co-hosts we were able to. That all being said, ladies and gentlemen, you just got the cue for our next break. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. And Phyllis, classic way that we just did that break, but I do want to know the answer to the question as well.
So the idea of creating and sustaining a healthy work environment is something very near and dear to my heart. And I honestly talk about it as the leadership imperative for the 21st century. I'm not the first one to talk about healthy work environment. I'm not that smart. There are some great thought leaders out there, not the least of which is Dr. Christina Maslach, who has put a tremendous amount of work out on these subjects. She identifies four things that will make a healthy work environment. She's talking about workload, control, how much control individual workers would have, are there appropriate rewards, and what is the idea of fairness in distribution of work. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement, the IHI, is a very highly respected organization within the healthcare industry, and it came across with its Joy in Work initiative probably about 2 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. And they come at how to improve the work environment from the perspective of looking at your quality initiatives and taking care of what they term the pebbles in the shoe, you know, like the things that annoy you. Like, you know, if you could just come to work and do your job, that would be fine, but you have to put up with all this other extraneous distractions and irritations. And they say that the focus needs to be put on those extraneous things, and then you would be able to then be more joyful at work. It wouldn't be such a stress and strain. But again, my colleagues at the Association of Critical Care Nurses came out long ago with what they term the six pillars of a healthy work environment. And they say that a healthy work environment is comprised of skilled communication, true collaboration, adequate staffing, authentic leadership, meaningful recognition, and effective decision making. Now that's powerful. And you can use that as a blueprint and really take a look at where is your department. Start local and go broader. Where is your department? What are the communication issues? You know, are you truly collaborating or is it a power struggle? Are you working with silos? You know, how are you, you know, do you have adequate staffing? And not just numbers of nurses, but, you know, I'm really seeing that there are, you know, there are support staff that we seem to have done away with at some point. Managed care, I think, kind of did away with that and the computers. So yeah. I'm just going to say a shout out to administrative assistants across the country. My God, there's not enough of you. And I don't know what I would do without you. But because now we all have our own PCs in our office or our laptops, we're not only expected to do the nursing piece, but now we have to do the paperwork piece, create the charts, upload data into certain things. And those, I'm not sure that's the best use of nursing hours, quite honestly. So is there, do we need to go back to an administrative pool, administrative assistant pool, where we can offer work to people who can help support what we're doing so that we can spend nursing hours in a very different way, as opposed to I need to learn this new program and it takes away from my opportunity to round on my unit or be with my patients or be with my staff. So, you know, it's not just numbers of staff, it's the right staff doing the right job that we really need to focus on. And then we're looking at authentic, you know, meaningful recognition. So, you know, are we, you know, really promoting people so that the recognition is felt. Every time you recognize someone, it should deepen their sense of belonging to that organization. It shouldn't be just, you know what I mean? It that's not enough. And no. You're wasting a tremendous opportunity to say to that person in five sentences or less, what you did contributed to everybody's benefit, especially the patient's benefit. Yes. And then you deepen their sense of belonging to that organization. And when people feel they belong someplace, they're going to think twice about moving on because right. That's such a rare thing to feel. And then effective decision making. And I think we're making good strides in these things because we now have healthcare organizations that are embracing what we call the Magnet Program. And the Magnet Program, for lack of a better reference, is like the good housekeeping seal of approval on nursing and the nursing structure within that organization. But what that program really purports is it's they want shared governance. They want acknowledgement that nurses are highly educated, highly skilled, highly trained, highly dedicated, and are creative, and that they should own their own environment and come up with creative solutions. And we want to tap into that talent to create an inclusive environment, again, anchoring that sense of belonging, not just to your profession and yourself, but to that organization. And I think we're doing really good work in that. Where I think we're falling short, and where I think the discussion has not gone further, and where I think I lend my voice now into the conversation about healthy work environment, is the issue of disruptive behavior, specifically bullying and incivility. And I want to share with you that during the Schwartz Center podcast, the person who was representing the ANA Foundation reported that a significant number of nurses reported that they were working in a healthy, unhealthy work environment, that only 42% of the nurses reported that they worked in a healthy work environment. Mm-hmm. You do the math, that's what, 58% said otherwise, right? Yeah. So, but here's the one that's of concern. 60% of the respondents reported that they experienced bullying and incivility within the last year. Now, we need to get our arms around this. And I certainly understand that no one likes to talk about behavior or lean into behavior except our beloved colleagues in behavioral health. But the reason why they feel in such command of this subject is because that's what they've studied. You know, I can tell you in the emergency department, if I said to a nurse, do you want four gunshot wounds or one person with a behavioral health issue? They're going to say, I'll take the assignment with the four gunshot wounds. And it's not because of anything other than that's where their competency lies. We don't do enough training and understanding about behavior, let alone aberrant behavior. So we need to get comfortable with having crucial conversations. We need to get comfortable and understand how the mindset of a bully, which is really a narcissist, works, how they are going to use disruptive conversation of plausible deniability and gaslighting to confuse and confound. We need to have training around this so that our middle managers and upper managers are together in understanding what's going on. They can identify it quickly and they can then address it better. We need to put real boundaries around disruptive behavior of incivility. And just in short, incivility is defined as that person who, if they called in sick, you know you're going to have a better day. Their behavior is so annoying, it's so draining, it's so disruptive, it's so distracting, they just suck all the air out of the room. And we they don't get their work done, so now their work dumps on you. And it's just like, why am I here? They get paid this, why am I here? So if we don't get our arms around, first of all, those great six pillars offered by AACN, but also really sincerely commit to addressing the issue of disruptive behavior in terms of creating a healthier work environment where talent feels they belong and they thrive, then I think we're not going to fully address the issue unless we do that.
Now, here's a situation, Phyllis. My God, literally, this could have been in itself another 2-hour show, but we're 2 minutes till closing. But I can see now what that survey was showing, that a lot of nurses are leaving for a better pathway to continue doing what they love doing, which is nursing.
Exactly.
So I got that message perfectly. It's just a shame that our organizational structures are still a little antiquated, where it's creating and reinforcing the perception that nursing is not as much of a priority as it is and should be considered. So the thing that I'm noticing is that maybe one aspect for the viewers and listeners to take away from this episode is that as the nurses, the 67% of nurses that are planning and leaving in 3 years are leaving, they probably should be leaving to get hold of the culture that they want to thrive in, rather than something.
So I think we have an opportunity to create a culture where nurses work at the top of their license. I think we have an opportunity to make sure that the hours that nurses spend are on nursing issues and not paperwork and other things. I think we have an opportunity to really strengthen our leaders so that they understand they need to be visible and they need to round and they need to listen firsthand to the staff. What are their needs and concerns? You don't want somebody telling you, you don't need a survey telling you. If you're relying on surveys to tell you about what your staff needs, you have dropped the ball big time. You need to get out there and round and have a cup of coffee and talk to them yourselves. They need, that's that authentic leadership that is that essential pillar. I just really think that we need to understand that nursing is the most trusted profession in the country. Yes. And I want your listeners, despite other things that are out there, I want your listeners to understand that your trust is not misplaced. We are dealing right. with shortages. We are working collaboratively with leaders and great thought leaders, and we will get our arms around this as we have gotten our arms around it before.
Yes, and getting my arms around you right now as we sign off, I want to say I will definitely see you next week on our next episode of Frank About Health. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for staying tuned to this very insightful hour where Phyllis and I were able to talk about one of the key essential professions in the healthcare industry. I mean, we'll have other episodes talking about the others, but nursing is priority one. That all being said, stay tuned for tomorrow's shows, which are Philanthropy in Focus and Always Friday, right here on talkradio.nyc. And we'll be back next week. Thank you for staying tuned right here on talkradio.nyc and Facebook Live. Signing off now. Have a good night.
Good night. Thank you, Frank.
You're very welcome, Phyllis. Bye.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.